However, I know it's necessary. I'm just surprised she agreed.
She's insisted all these years she's had no contact with him. Lee says he wants to go over her testimony, and she's agreed. She also said she would provide a DNA sample. Usually, people who have something to hide aren't so quick to involve themselves in a case that has supposedly been solved. So think what you will. But again, Tess, this is all good for you. The more people who come forward, the more evidence we discover that wasn't presented at your first trial, the more likely it is that you win this time around, either because the case is dropped or you fight through to an exoneration.
You believe her?
I need to see her, face to face. Lee said she sounded as though she was encouraged by the new evidence. Again, I don't know. Maybe she's just a damn good actress. Or maybe Liam really did fall off the face of the earth and he hasn't contacted her. If he's the ass you say he is, and I'm sure you would know, he just might be the type who wouldn't care if his mother knows whether he's dead or alive.
He'd need money, she added.
Liam had a trust fund. Though there hasn't been any activity, at least none that could be traced, and that's virtually impossible in this day and age.
We don't know, but we are going to find out. I promise you, Tess. I will find out what happened to your family. She hoped he wasn't telling her this just to calm her. She knew what had happened to her family. She knew they were killed in such a savage manner that it defied all belief. And she knew that Liam Jameson was responsible for their deaths. Her brother-in-law, the girl's uncle, Joel's brother. She needed him to suffer as she had, to feel such angst, loss, the broken heart that had been her life since she walked into her home all those years ago and discovered their bodies. He had to suffer, because Tessa wasn't sure how she could move forward if he didn't. "Don't make promises you can't keep," Tessa told him. "I don't think I could deal with life, at least a disappointment of this magnitude," she ended flatly. And she knew that she spoke the truth. It was tough enough to get through the days and nights in prison. Now that she was on the outside, in the real world, getting through a minute was 10 times harder than she had ever anticipated.
"I'm not making any promises, just so you know. I do have faith in Lee and his team. I don't think you'd be here now if he didn't believe in your innocence. I wouldn't be here either," he added.
The room was quiet for a moment. Then Tessa spoke. "Evil destroyed my family, and it's about time I fought back." Chapter 17. Later, Jill, Tessa, and Sam gathered around the glass coffee table in the living room. Tessa sat on the soft leather love seat with Jill at her side. Two of the three people who had the power to change her life were expected any moment. She had showered and changed into a pair of navy capris with a matching silk top, again the clothes courtesy of the fabulous Darlene. The ankle monitor was irritating, but she was already starting to get used to its weight, the bulkiness of it around her ankle its own sort of prison, but mild in comparison to the hellhole she had been confined to for more than 10 years. Briefly, she wondered if it would ever be removed. And if so, would it be because she was a free woman, or because once she was returned to prison, it would no longer be required? The front doorbell rang, and Sam quickly stood and excused himself. They'd all agreed he would be in charge of this task, as he was quite expert at handling the gentle and not-so-gentle men and women of the media, who continued to linger outside the gates and could be counted on to try to get someone in the house to speak to them. Lee Whitlow sat opposite her. He'd dressed down, wearing faded jeans and a pale pink polo. Tessa so admired his dedication to his wife and her battle with breast cancer. Had Tessa still been actively employed at Jameson Pharmaceuticals, she too would have involved herself in the search for a cure. Maybe if she was released, she could involve herself in the research, but that was a distant thought. One she couldn't pursue until she knew if she even had a chance of returning to her profession. She had been away from the pharmaceutical industry for so many years, she wasn't sure if she could even qualify for employment in her own company. But that was for another time. Now she had to face the facts, and only then would she be able to make a decision that would affect her future. Sam cleared his throat, garnering their attention.
"This is George Atkins. His uncle owns Atkins Moving and Storage. Have a seat, George."
Sam pointed to the plush leather chair beside Lee's. Tall and pale, with bright red hair, George appeared nervous, his light blue eyes glancing around at his surroundings, and his right leg shook so fast when he sat down that Tessa wondered if he was on drugs. Thankfully, Lee took over. He made quick introductions, and once that ritual was completed, George seemed to have controlled his spastic leg movements. Not wasting a minute, Lee began his questions.
"Tell me about that day, please. What you observed."
Direct and to the point, Tessa waited for George to explain what he'd seen the day he'd packed her family's life away, or that of her daughters, as she wasn't sure if George had packed away Joel's personal belongings. At this point, she wasn't sure that it mattered. George appeared to be in his late 20s or early 30s. When he'd worked for his uncle, according to Lee, he'd been young, so given the passage of time, she assumed this was probably a good guess. He looked at Tessa before he spoke. She nodded, and he began his story.
"I was nervous when Uncle Walt told me I'd be coming with him to pack the place up. I'd watched the news, so I knew what had happened here. I packed up the kitchen and the dining room."
He paused, as though he were looking to Tessa for permission to continue. "It's okay," she said in a reassuring voice, though she felt anything but calm. "Please, go on."
"I went upstairs and started emptying the drawers, clothes and stuff."
His face deepened to a bright pink shade.
"I was curious, and well, I kind of wanted to brag to my buddies about the job."
Tessa wanted to smack him, but controlled herself.
"Tell me where you found the sketchbooks,"
Lee prompted. George nodded.
"They were in the closet."
Tessa tried to recall if she had seen the sketchbooks the day she had raced through the house packing the essentials she would need for the girls' extended stay in San Maribel. She had grabbed a couple of sketchbooks from Poppy's desk and one from Piper's night table, but she did not remember seeing one in either closet.
"Where in the closet?"
Lee asked. George's face grew red.
"The floor, under the board that had been loosened."
Tessa leaned to the edge of the love seat. Jill placed an arm around her shoulders.
"What do you mean?" she asked him. "There was no..."
"Would you be able to locate the board now?"
Lee interrupted, holding up a hand to silence Tessa.
"It's very important,"
he added. Tessa thought that was putting it mildly.
"Show me,"
Lee said, then stood.
"Tessa, you might want to see this."
"I certainly do," she replied.
Without saying another word, they all followed Lee upstairs. Once they were inside Poppy's bedroom, Tessa had to force herself not to cry, not to howl in utter pain at the sheer horridness of what they were doing, why they were there. George hesitated as he approached the closet.
"I'm sorry," he said, as he looked at Tessa.
She shook her head. Just show me where you found those sketchbooks. You are doing your job, she added, hoping to reassure him, even though she herself felt as panicky as she had when she had entered this very room yesterday. He entered the walk-in closet. The floors were the same as they were before, wide planks of oak that still appeared relatively new. George wedged himself into the far right corner of the closet, then bent over. Tessa held her breath as she watched as he removed a plank of wood at least 18 inches long. He held the wood out to Lee.
It wasn't this easy before.
Lee examined the wood, then gave it to Sam.
Send this to Harry.
How were you able to spot this? Tessa inquired. I lived here and never saw any sign the floor had been tampered with. Tessa was sure she would have noticed the loose board had it been here before. But again, she reminded herself, she didn't routinely inspect the closet floors. Rosa cleaned in here. Possibly there would be an answer when Lee questioned her later.
When I entered the closet, this piece of wood just stuck out like a sore thumb. The seams were fresh, like it had been recently moved or replaced. Knowing what had happened here, well, I just thought I would have a look, and that's when I found those art books.
Lee nodded.
Did you look at the pictures?
George's face reddened again.
Yes, I did.
And why didn't you report this to the police?
Sam interjected.
You knew a crime had been committed in this house.
His voice was tight, restrained, as though he was holding back a flood of anger.
I called my uncle. He said to just do my job and pack the books away. You...
His expression stilled, grew serious.
You'd been arrested. And, well, me and Uncle Walt just assumed...
What? You assumed this was just a little girl's drawings that had been passed over? Dear God, didn't you see what the drawings were? Surely you couldn't have been that naive. Tessa wanted to shake some sense into this idiot, but it was too late for that. Plus, she didn't want to have a charge of assault filed against her, which would certainly land her right back in prison. George shook his head.
It was wrong. I know that now, and I told my uncle. But he said it was up to the police to locate evidence. If it had been important, he said, they would have found it. I packed the boxes, and when I heard you were being released, I told my uncle that if I was contacted, I would not keep silent this time around. I was a dumb 16-year-old kid then. I was afraid.
Knowing his age at the time didn't change the fact that he'd kept crucial evidence out of the hands of the authorities. But Tessa could see his point. He was young, scared. The uncle, now that was completely different.
It's not an excuse,
Lee said.
You're willing to testify to this? Under oath?
George nodded.
Yes. I should have spoken up all those years ago, but...
It's too late for an apology, whatever excuse you have. This might have changed the outcome of my trial. Do you realize the consequences of what you did? Tessa asked, her voice several octaves higher than normal. I swear! With that, she walked out of Poppy's room. She was not going to resort to violent behavior and wind up back in prison because this stupid young man had not had the guts to tell the truth. Such cowardice had contributed to her being in prison in the first place. Chapter 18. Tessa wanted to run out the front door, and would have, if not for the large number of media people gathered at the gates outside her house. She forced herself to stop at the bottom of the staircase before she acted on the impulse and continued to run outside, only to find herself surrounded by unfriendly reporters of various kinds. Trapped inside her house was turning out to be almost as bad as being in prison, although, to be sure, she didn't have a guard like Hicks teasing and taunting her. The media had taken her place.
"Hey, are you okay?"
Jill asked as she came up behind Tessa.
"You ran out so fast."
Tessa took a deep breath, hoping to calm herself, but it didn't help.
"How can that little punk live with himself? I am so angry. His testimony could have helped my case. I don't know."
She twisted her long hair in her hand.
"I feel as if I need to act, to do something other than just sit here and wait on Rosa and Rochelle and that,"
she pointed upstairs,
"total jerk. It's hard, Jill. Very hard."
Tears surged again, something she was becoming quite used to, and, as was becoming more common now that she was out of prison and did not have to hide her emotions, she let the tears stream down her face.
"I know, sweetie, I know. We are going to make this right no matter what we have to do. I promise. I think Lee Whitlow is top-notch. And I swear I haven't Googled the man. He's smart and seems to know what he has to do for you, and Sam does as well. You're the toughest gal I know, Tessa. I couldn't have endured all this and kept my sanity."
Tessa gave up a half-hearted smile. "Bull, I don't believe that for a minute." Voices coming from the top of the staircase were heard before Jill could respond. Lee, Sam, and George came down the stairs. George held out his hand to her.
"Mrs. Jameson, I can't even begin to know what you have been through, but I..."
He stammered, and this almost made her feel sorry for him. Almost.
"I will do anything I can to help with your new trial. It was totally wrong of me and my uncle not to go to the police and the DA to let them know what we had found."
Hesitantly, Tessa took his offered hand. "Yes, it was wrong, George. Very wrong. But I do not suppose there is any point in my rehashing your reasoning. As long as you're willing to tell what you saw now, I'm okay." To be sure, Tessa was fudging a bit on this, but anger, recrimination, and holding on to the past could not change her future. George nodded, looking relieved, and Sam led him out the back entrance. Once the people of the press saw him, they were likely to put two and two together if they hadn't already. And neither Tessa nor any of the others wanted them to get too much of a head start on learning about the new witnesses and what they might testify to. Lee looked at his watch.
"It's almost 8 o'clock, so Rosa should be here pretty soon. Are you sure you want to sit in on this one?"
he asked Tessa, as they all returned to the living room.
"You can tell me what you want to ask her, and I will."
"No, I want to confront her myself," she said adamantly. "I know her, and I need to know why she..."
"No, that's not it.
I do know why. What I want to hear from her own mouth is exactly what she saw that day."
"Fair enough,"
Lee said.
"Though I'll want to question her, inform her what to expect when we go to trial. I don't want her running off."
"Isn't there something you can do legally to make sure she stays here to testify?"
Jill asked.
"I would hate to see her take off because she was afraid."
"There are a few tactics I can use,"
Lee said.
"I doubt I'll have to. When I spoke to her, she was extremely remorseful. And without having the threat of being deported as an excuse this time around, I don't think I'll have to resort to any legal razzmatazz."
Sam came back into the living room.
I have taken the liberty of ordering takeout from Papa Luigi's. I know the owner, and asked them to call me when they were close so I can meet them around back, he announced. I don't know about the rest of you, but I am famished.
Tessa realized that she was hungry and was thankful that Sam had taken the initiative to feed them. Half an hour later, Sam's cell phone rang, telling them their dinner was right around the corner. There was still no sign of Rosa, and it was way past 8 o'clock. Sam met the delivery driver before he had a chance to enter the screened-in pool area. Sam returned carrying 3 large bags with heavenly smells emanating from them.
"Hope Italian works for everyone," he said, as he took plates from the cabinets and placed them around the bar in the kitchen.
Tessa took knives and forks out of the drawer and put them next to the plates. "It works for me. I can't remember the last time I had real Italian food."
She was reminded of the cans of SpaghettiOs she used to order from the prison commissary. Was that considered Italian?
"Lee, Jill, help yourselves," Sam said, as he removed paper lids from large foil pans.
The delicious scents of garlic and tomato sauce emanating from lasagna, cheese ravioli, and baked ziti filled the kitchen. The tantalizing odor of garlic knots made Tessa's mouth water. A large container of antipasto with salami, cheese, hot peppers, pepperoni, anchovies, and green and black olives supplemented the carbohydrate-laden dishes. It was a feast right out of The Godfather.
As they filled their plates with the food, Tessa half listened for a knock on the glass doors. She forked a bite of lasagna into her mouth, closing her eyes and reveling in the heavenly taste. If she were forced to return to that hellhole of a prison, she knew she would spend many nights reliving this meal. For the next few minutes, the 4 ate heartily. When they finished, Lee excused himself to make a phone call.
"She's not coming," Tessa said.
Lee came back into the kitchen.
"No, she's on her way here. Apparently she had to call a cab, said they were running late. Not sure why she didn't call to tell us, but she assured me she would be here within 15 minutes.
Breathing a sigh of relief, Tessa nodded. "I don't think she ever learned to drive, at least not when she worked for us. She had a relative bring her most days, or Joel would send a car for her. I can't imagine living in San Maribel and not driving." Actually, she could. It had been years since she had had a driver's license or driven a car. The last time she had driven, she had been racing to get home to the girls. She didn't know if she would even remember how to drive if for some reason she had to.
"If you don't have to learn, you won't," Sam said. "At least she knows how to use a cell phone."
His last words were laced with sarcasm.
Tessa discovered that she did not really appreciate the disparaging comment from Sam, as she knew Rosa, or at least she thought she did. Then again, maybe Rosa wasn't the kind, sweet woman she had led her and Joel to believe. Rosa had not come forward when she could have, and that alone spoke volumes. What were her priorities at the time of the murders? What did the woman care about? How little she must have thought of Tessa, Joel, and the girls. This line of thinking made Tessa's blood boil, so she could understand where Sam's sarcasm was coming from. He'd met Rosa on occasion, too, but had never, at least to her knowledge, known her very well.
"She was good with the girls," Tessa said. "They always enjoyed spending time with her. And I thought the feelings were reciprocated, but apparently I was wrong."
She wanted to add more, but didn't. Lee was probably aware that Joel had taken care of hiring Rosa and, quite possibly, had overlooked her lack of legal status.
"We don't care how good a housekeeper or babysitter she was. Don't allow yourself to feel pity, Tessa. She might have information that could have turned the entire investigation another way," Lee explained. If she sees you as sympathizing with what her situation was then, she might think you're letting her off the hook and be more willing to help out in your defense.
I don't care what her opinion of me is. I want her to tell us what she knows. That's it, Tessa said, as she went to the sink and began rinsing the dinner plates and placing them in the dishwasher. Jill handed her the knives and forks. She ran them under the hot water and dropped the knives and forks in the basket in the dishwasher.
I assume you told her to use the back entrance?
Of course,
Lee said.
The members of the media are still at their posts out front, and I doubt they're going to leave us alone anytime soon. They came to get a story. And what with Chen thinking about running for governor, this is the biggest story around.
Sam had remained silent during the cleanup, but he spoke now.
Why don't we give them something? Tell them about the bones we found. Get them off our backs.
Lee raised his brows, obviously considering Sam's suggestion.
That might not be a bad idea. But let's wait until Rosa shows up. I want to hear her story first, then we'll decide. Are you all right with this, Tessa?
Do I really have a choice? I'll do whatever it takes, Lee. I have let you know my position time and time again. I do not want to speak to the media, now or ever, not in a million years. But you or Sam do what you feel is best. She despised the media. They were to blame, at least in her mind, for her racing off to San Maribel in the first place. She had known that her girl's nightmare would become public, and she had had to prevent that. In doing so, she had killed them. By not telling Joel about his brother's abuse, she might as well have put a gun to their heads and pulled the trigger. It was her fault. No matter what Jill or Sam or Lee said, she had put the cart before the horse, and doing so had cost her everything that was dear to her. Everything.
I want to see what Rosa says. Then we can decide,
Lee said again. Tessa didn't have anything to say to that, so she continued to clean the kitchen. Her thoughts were all over the place. It still seemed surreal, being here in her own home, surrounded by familiar yet unfamiliar things. New furnishings, floors, and walls did practically nothing to eliminate the images of what she had found at the pool that horrible day. She doubted that they would ever fade away. Like an old photo that had aged to a blurry finish, the edges of her memory of that day were faded, dried with time. But the actual picture of what she had seen was clear, as sharp as if she had just taken a snapshot of the scene. It had taken a very long time for this image to return, but now she could remember every single detail of what she had seen. And there was one detail that had always nagged her about Joel, and she had never repeated it to anyone, for fear they'd think she had totally gone off the deep end. But still, it nagged at her. He appeared so different. Yes, she knew he'd been killed, murdered, and she understood the decomposition process, the bloating, all the scientific terms for describing a dead body in water. But she still felt that something wasn't right. Later, after Rosa left, maybe she would tell Jill about it. Jill was a doctor, and she might have an explanation for Tessa's feeling. They all turned when they heard a light knock on the glass doors.
I'll get it, Sam said, moving to the back of the house.
Stay calm, Jill coaxed Tessa. You have nothing to be afraid of.
That was easy for Jill to say. Tessa had everything to fear. Her temporary freedom would most likely be taken away from her, and she would have to return to prison for the rest of her life if things did not go well. She was simply not going to allow herself to get her hopes up, even though Lee and Sam were very encouraging. Going back to prison is what she should focus on. It was so hard to be optimistic when you'd spent a decade of your life behind bars. And it was much worse because she was innocent.
Tessa, Jill said, are you okay? You seem like you're a million miles away.
Tessa agreed. Sorry, I was. I do that a lot. I'll be fine.
Let's get this over with,
Jill told her.
Rosa is waiting.
Taking a deep breath, Tessa could not help but feel a bit anxious. It was time to hear from the horse's mouth exactly what her former housekeeper had witnessed. Chapter 19. Rosa had not aged well at all, Tessa thought as soon as she saw the woman. Her dark hair was now a harsh steel gray color, reminding Tessa of a used Brillo pad. Her once round, honey brown eyes were heavy-lidded, making her appear as though she were squinting. She wore a dark skirt and a faded floral print blouse that looked as though it came from another century. On her feet were brown sandals that revealed calloused heels and toenails with chipped orange polish that were much too long and in need of a trim. To say she had aged and let herself go would be more than kind. In her early 60s now, she looked as if she could already be an octogenarian. Tessa would not have recognized her had she run into her on the street or at the mall. "Miss Tessa!" Rosa exclaimed as soon as she saw her. Her Mexican accent was virtually non-existent. "I missed you so much, and the girls, too." Tessa was not sure how to respond, so she didn't. Tessa was shocked that the older woman seemed so normal, as though they were the best of friends, and Tessa was simply returning from a long vacation instead of 10 years in prison as a convicted murderer.
Rosa, she said, finally acknowledging the older woman.
Lee and Sam were seated on the sofa, Rosa in the chair opposite. Tessa chose the chair that faced the pool area. Jill sat on the arm of the chair, her left hand casually resting on Tessa's right shoulder. Lee waited a few seconds, then removed a legal pad and a tape recorder from his briefcase. He went through the legal spiel with Rosa, making sure it was on record that she was here of her own free will and that no one had coerced her into making a statement. He handed her several papers for her signature. As soon as she finished signing them, Lee returned them to the briefcase.
Can you tell us what you saw on the last morning you were at this house? In as much detail as you can remember. Any detail you think may not be important probably is. So I want you to tell me.
Lee looked at Tessa.
Us. Everything that you saw and heard.
Rosa nodded, her steel gray hair coming loose from the bun coiled at the top of her head. She reached up and tucked the hair back into the bun, then smoothed her skirt, crossed her legs, and sat up straight. She continued to stare at Tessa, then began to speak.
It was Saturday morning, the day after Miss Tessa went away. I went upstairs to do the beds after I had breakfast with the girls. The girls had their cereal and stayed in the kitchen.
She paused, removed a tissue from her skirt pocket, blotted her eyes, then went on.
I decided to do the toilets first.
She stopped speaking, took a breath, and looked directly at Tessa.
I usually do the toilets last, but not that day. I don't know why I changed my routine. I cleaned the master bathroom first, then I cleaned the girls' bathroom. All those bright colors. They made me smile.
Lee interrupted her.
So you changed your routine that day, correct?
Rosa nodded.
I did.
Lee scribbled something on his legal pad, then asked Rosa,
Did you plan on changing your normal cleaning routine that day, or was it spontaneous?
She looked to Tessa, then Jill, as though they had answers.
Tessa was not going to help in making this easier for her, and neither was Jill.
I don't understand, Rosa stated.
When you headed upstairs while the girls were eating breakfast, was it your intention to strip the beds first?
Yes. Yes, it was.
And all of a sudden, out of the blue, you're in Mr. and Mrs. Jameson's bedroom and decide to do the toilets first? You don't know why? You had a sudden change of mind for no reason at all?
Rosa seemed confused.
I don't know. I just decided to do the bathrooms. That is all I can tell you.
Lee made another note on his legal pad. Tessa watched Rosa and could see that the woman was nervous, uncomfortable at being questioned so closely.
Okay, you had a change of mind. I'll accept that. Do you recall how much time you took cleaning the bathrooms?
Maybe 15 minutes. I only did the toilets, not the showers, tubs, or floors.
Okay, you finished the bathrooms. Walk me through your next round of duties,
Lee instructed. He was relaxed, and Tessa could see that he was in his element questioning Rosa. She could only imagine the effect he'd have on a jury while questioning or cross-examining a witness. With all eyes focused on her, Rosa adjusted her position, her rigid stance slackening. She tucked stray hairs back into her bun.
I went to Poppy's room first. She was very particular about her bedroom. She always helped me to clean. That morning she had made her bed, so I didn't want to undo her work, so I decided I would change her bed the next day. I went to Piper's room and stripped her bed.
Lee held up a hand.
Stop for a minute.
Rosa nodded.
Did you replace the sheets on Piper's bed then or later?
Then. I remember I used the lavender sheets. They were her favorite. She liked all shades of purple.
Tears filled Tessa's eyes as she listened to Rosa talk about her daughters and their likes and dislikes.
What did you do after that?
Lee asked. Rosa appeared troubled at the question. Her eyes downcast, she picked at her nails.
I was going to change the linens in the master bedroom, but when I went into the hall, I heard voices downstairs. Very loud voices. Angry-sounding voices.
Tessa's heart rate sped up and skipped a beat. She leaned in to hear Rosa's next words.
Go on,
Lee encouraged.
They were yelling, the men, and it frightened me. I had never heard Mr. Jameson scream and carry on like he was. I called Roberto, my brother, from the portable phone he had brought me that day. I asked him to come back right away. I did not want to stay at the house. I wanted to go home so I did not have to listen to the men hollering. I was scared stiff.
Men? Tessa was shocked.
You say men. How many?
Lee asked.
Two, at first, Rosa said. Then Mr. Jameson. He just stopped yelling. The other man stopped, too. I heard a loud, very fast banging on the front door. That is when the yelling stopped. I waited because I thought that Mr. Jameson and the other man are arguing about business and have forgotten that they are not at his office. I wanted to check on the girls, so I went downstairs.
Rosa hesitated and looked at Tessa.
I stopped when I heard the other man.
Why? Did you know this other man?
Lee asked her.
What made you stop, and where exactly were you?
I was there.
She pointed to the bottom of the stairs.
The wall that used to be there blocked the view from the kitchen, where I heard the voices coming from. I didn't see the other man, just heard him,
and I had never heard him before.
Was this other man in the kitchen?
Lee asked.
Not at first. I think that Mr. Jameson let him in, then the man followed him back to the kitchen.
Rosa shot a pleading look at Tessa again, as if she were begging for her forgiveness.
Where were the girls during this argument?
I think they were still in the kitchen at that point.
So, the girls are in the kitchen, presumably having their cereal. Their father is screaming at one man, then another knocks on the front door. Mr. Jameson answers it, invites this strange man into the house, and this third man then follows him back to the kitchen, where the first two men continue to yell and argue? Would you agree that this statement is accurate?
Lee looked at Tessa and gave a slight nod. Tessa was trying very hard to keep her emotions under control and not react. Lee had obviously sensed this. It was all she could do to remain seated. She wanted to strangle Rosa, wanted to shake her until she... What? Tessa took a deep breath, letting it out slowly. It would not be a good idea to lose her temper at this point.
Yes, that is a true statement, Rosa agreed.
Did you recognize the two men, or at least their voices? Had you ever heard them before that day?
Lee continued with his questions while they waited. Rosa nodded.
I knew the younger man, Mr. Jameson's brother, Liam. He was in the kitchen with Mr. Jameson when the other man knocked on the front door.
What did I tell you? Tessa shot off her chair. That worthless son of a bitch killed my family. I want him found now. I don't give a good rat's ass how much it costs or what you have to do to find him.
Tess, calm down.
Sam reached her in three giant steps and wrapped his arms around her.
This isn't going to help us right now. Give us a minute, okay?
Sam tossed over his shoulder as he led Tessa to the kitchen.
Sit down,
he said, then took a glass from the cupboard and filled it with water from the tap.
We need to hear what Rosa has to say, okay? I can only imagine how hard it is, but it's what needs to be done right now. She has already helped you. You realize this? Whatever else she says, her story confirms that the murders took place on Saturday, not on Friday, as the state said at your trial. You were in San Maribel all day Saturday and could not have committed a murder in San Maribel. Once the DA hears Rosa's account, it will not matter what else we learn. He will have to drop the charges unless he can disprove her story.
Tessa took a drink of water. Okay, I can see that. But I want to know more. Who in the hell was here that day? Joel never conducted his business at home, let alone in the kitchen where Poppy and Piper would have been having their breakfast. I don't know if I believe her, Sam. She could be making this up, just to cover her ass. Tessa blew out a breath, which caused her hair to fly in front of her face. She was more confused now than she had been before. How could a person keep something of this magnitude to herself? And how in the world could those who conducted the investigation, no, the witch hunt, with her being the prey, not have known of this? What kind of incompetence could lead to her being charged and convicted of murders that were supposed to have occurred on Friday, when all the victims were still alive on Saturday?
I know it's tough, but we need to listen to her story. Lee will pick it apart and won't stop until he's satisfied. Remember, he has never lost a case.
Sam emphasized the last four words.
Trust me, okay?
Trust? Not something she had experienced much of in her life, at least until she had met and married Joel. Her mother was a drug addict. She had no clue who her father was, and Laura, her only living relative, at least that she knew of,
hadn't even bothered to call her and ask how she was doing. Trust? It had never come easy for her. I'll try, she said.
Let Lee do his job, Sam said, as he led her back to the living room.
Are you all right? Jill asked.
I can give you something if you need it.
Tessa gave her a half-hearted smile. She pointed to the ankle monitor. Rules. No alcohol, no drugs. But I appreciate your concern. I'm dealing with this now. She looked at Rosa, who was cowering in her chair. The woman was afraid, there was no doubt about that. But she was no longer in fear of deportation, and according to Lee, her entire family were all now legal citizens. What else could she possibly have to be afraid of?
Are you sure you want to listen in? Lee asked her. I can do this at the office.
No, I'm fine. Just do what you have to do. Tessa never wavered as she said this, looking at Rosa the entire time. I want to hear what happened in my house the day my family was slaughtered. She remembered that word, the very one that had been used by the prosecution and the media to describe what she had supposedly done before she left for San Maribel on Friday. Lee nodded and turned to Rosa.
Rosa, did you hear anything specific from the younger Mr. Jameson? From Liam Jameson?
Rosa nodded.
Tell us what you heard him say,
Lee instructed.
Word for word.
Chapter 20. Almost immediately after Lee said this, his cell phone buzzed, and he excused himself to take the call. The tension in the room intensified when he left the room. Rosa squirmed in her chair, trying not to focus on Tessa. Tessa had a dozen questions floating through her mind. So Liam had been here that day, not in Japan as she had been led to believe before going to San Maribel. Just as she had always been sure of, he was the person who killed her family. But who was the third man? Someone from Jameson Pharmaceuticals? And if so, who would come to their home? What was being argued about? The company was stable and thriving, though she had to admit she hadn't been involved in the day-to-day operations since she had left her position to start a family. Joel never complained to her about the inner workings of the company. She had just assumed that there wasn't anything to complain about. They were a healthy, happy family, blessed with loving children. Their lives hadn't been perfect, but close. Or so she had thought. Lee returned.
Tessa, I need to speak to you and Sam.
Her pulse increased again, and for a minute she feared that her heart would burst from her chest. Jill? She asked.
You mind waiting here?
Lee asked Jill, nodding in Rosa's direction.
Not at all, Jill said.
Tessa knew this was Lee's way of asking Jill to watch Rosa, make sure she didn't decide to disappear again. As soon as they were out of eavesdropping range, Lee spoke.
That was Harry. He says the watch stopped on the date it showed, said it was hit, slammed against something hard enough to do the damage. There's DNA on it, too.
That can't be right! Sam said that he packed up Joel's desk and the watch was in his desk. It's impossible, right? He couldn't have put it in his desk, not then. He wasn't alive.
I'm just telling you what Harry said. The impact on the watch, by whatever means, caused it to stop on the day of the murders. That means the murders occurred on Saturday, not Friday. It supports Rosa's story about her last day working being on Saturday, not Friday. As to how the watch got to Joel's office, I'm sure there is an explanation, but I haven't a clue what it could be. But I will find out. I promise, Lee said.
Tessa had taken in so much information in the past 48 hours. She couldn't process this last bit. Have you given this information to the district attorney?
Not yet. I wanted to tell you first.
What's Harry's plan on the DNA? Sam asked.
He'll run it against the samples taken at the scene, see if there's a match.
A match? Who else's DNA would be on that watch other than Joel's?
That's Harry's job to find out. Remember, Rochelle will be at my office tomorrow morning, and she's agreed to give a DNA sample. If Liam's DNA is on that watch, it's just one more fact to take to the DA.
Tessa dropped her head in her hands. Her head was pounding, and she was feeling nauseated. So you're saying that Joel's watch might have stopped during a fight or something? And if Liam's DNA shows up on the watch, what does this mean?
Let's wait for Harry. He knows the case, knows what to look for. We will get to the bottom of this. I'm going to call Michael Chen right now. Sam, you okay with questioning Rosa? I don't want her taking off or thinking she's off the hook. The events that took place, at least those she witnessed, need to be documented. I want her scared. And don't be easy on her.
I can do that, Sam agreed. You leaving now?
I want to get to Chen before any of this makes the evening news. The damned media are still stalking the neighborhood. We need to stay alert until we figure this out. Maybe I can get Chen and Judge Kreider, the old son of a bitch, to dismiss the charges, since the murders could not have happened on Friday, as the state alleged. At the very least, get him to give us a date for a new trial, something they can focus on while we investigate. If the evidence I have to take to the judge holds up, there won't be a need for a new trial. Now, Sam, Tessa, go see what else Rosa knows. I'll see you both tomorrow morning at my office. That is, if you want to see Rochelle.
I do, Tessa replied. I want to look into her eyes and tell her what an evil bastard she gave birth to.
I understand. Now, Sam, go, before she relaxes, gets too comfortable. I'll call if there's anything new to report.
Tessa and Sam returned to the living room. Rosa remained as she was. Jill had moved to the sofa and was sitting near the end closest to Rosa.
Lee had to leave. A big break in the case. I'm going to continue with the questions, Rosa. I'm an attorney, and have been working alongside Lee, so I'm as familiar with the case as he is. However, you may leave at any time. That's your legal right. But we will issue a subpoena when and if this goes to court. You will be forced to testify to what you saw and heard.
Her face paled.
But I thought if I told you what I saw, there would be no court, no trial.
It's a possibility, but there are no guarantees. Those papers you signed, it's all clearly outlined. Up to you, Rosa.
Tessa could see that Sam was not going to be as sympathetic and objective as Lee.
I will tell you what I saw, Rosa said. I want to help Miss Tessa.
Sure she does, Tessa thought.
That's why it took her 10 years to decide to come out with what she had to say.
Tessa wanted to slap her silly. The pent-up anger she had kept hidden all these years was not going to remain inside. It was ready to explode. But she would control her violent thoughts, both because it was not in her nature to be this way, and because she did not want to end up in jail, this time for a crime that she did commit. Unless it was for killing Liam Jameson. That son of a bitch. Nonetheless, the thought of harming this woman who had changed the course of her life was there, and Tessa thought that given what she had been through, her feelings were probably a natural reaction. Sam took the legal pad Lee had left him, read through the list of questions, then put it aside. He took his cell phone and set it up to continue recording Rosa's testimony.
We left off with you about to tell us what you heard the younger Mr. Jameson, Liam Jameson, say.
Rosa pulled herself upright again, her upper body perfectly straight.
How should I say this?
Any way you're comfortable, as long as it's the truth, Sam said.
He was not cutting Rosa any slack. Tessa appreciated this more than he knew. She needed someone on her side this time around, someone who believed in her. Sam McQuaid believed in her.
Jill sat beside her again, but this time she wasn't as relaxed. Maybe she didn't trust Sam. Lee was good, but if he trusted Sam in his place, then Tessa would too. She whispered to Jill,
"It's okay. Sam knows what he's doing."
"You read me well," Jill whispered back.
Sam cleared his throat.
"Rosa?"
She nodded.
"I was at the bottom of the steps, and they were arguing. I was very frightened."
"Rosa, you have said that more than once. I want to know what you heard Liam Jameson say."
"He said to Mr. Joel..."
Rosa's eyes suddenly filled with tears. She took another tissue from her pocket and blotted her tears.
"He said that he knew about the girls."
Tessa actually felt the color drain from her face. Her hands started shaking. She took a deep breath.
"What do you mean?"
She could hardly get the words out of her mouth. Rosa's head bobbed up and down, her bun finally coming completely undone. She didn't bother trying to fix it again.
"He said he knew about the girls."
She looked at Sam, praying he would get her to clarify what she had just said.
"Liam Jameson said he knew about the girls?"
Sam asked her again.
"You heard him say those exact words to Joel? Is that what you're saying?"
Rosa nodded.
"Is that all you heard?"
Sam asked.
"No."
The room was as silent as a tomb. Tessa felt as though she had stepped out of her body and was looking down on Jill, Sam, and Rosa from high overhead. The word surreal came to mind, an out-of-body experience.
"Tell us what you heard,"
Sam persisted.
"Exactly as you heard it being said."
Tessa watched Rosa. She could see that this wasn't easy for her, but again, she could have made a massive difference all those years ago and had chosen not to. She reminded herself of this each time she started to feel the least bit of sympathy for the woman she had trusted with her daughter's lives.
I heard him tell Mr. Jameson that he knew about the girls. That's how he said it. I swear to you,
Rosa repeated.
Just like that. He said he knew about the girls.
Okay,
Sam said.
Did you hear him say what he knew about the girls?
She shook her head.
That is all I heard. He did not say...
Rosa appeared to be searching for the right words.
Specifically. Yes, that is it. He did not say specifically what it was that he knew.
Tessa couldn't remain silent.
You're saying that Liam said that to Joel? Not the other way around?
Again, Rosa nodded.
I think you're confused, Tessa told her. You're not telling the truth.
Tess,
Sam chided.
Let me do my job.
How could he expect her to keep quiet?
Calm down, Tessa,
Jill said reassuringly.
Let Sam finish what he needs to do.
Tessa sighed, exerting an iron will of control, then motioned for Sam to continue with his questions. The mood in the room was grim, dark. She had a fleeting thought, wondering if this is how her girls felt when they'd heard the arguing that morning in the kitchen. If that's what they heard,
and still she wasn't convinced Rosa was telling the complete truth.
So, you are at the bottom of the staircase. You hear both Mr. Jameson's, Joel and Liam, arguing.
Sam stated in a matter-of-fact tone of voice.